The next case on our calendar is 95-2189, BCO Enterprises, Inc. versus State of Ohio Department of Liquor Control. Mr. Guthrie.
Please support Mr. Shoemaker. First of all, I'd like to reserve the time I have for the meeting for the case before the court today really involves a very narrow issue. That issue is, does Franklin County Court of Common Pleas have jurisdiction over the Department of Liquor Control in its discretionary selection of an agent to sell the department's liquor? The Court of Appeals reversal in this particular case, in effect, makes the Franklin County Common Pleas Court into a super department of liquor control as the final say in selecting an agent.
Mr. Guthrie, when I used to do this work, you on the other side, you always made me file in Franklin County. Now you're here telling me you shouldn't file in Franklin County. They changed the law and said you could file any place on protest, didn't they?
Justice, I would say I believe that what we have to look at are those sections 4301.10b1 and 4301.31 and look at those as parent criteria. And I think that if you examine those, I would say that with regard to 4301.10, it does say that the department may only be sued regarding execution of leases of real estate and also for purchases of contracts involving the state liquor stores.
Now, does this qualify? Why doesn't this situation meet that language? Is this a suit about that fits within the terms of 10?
No, it would not be, Your Honor, due to the fact that if you look at 4301.11 and 4301.17, I believe there's a very clear distinction that's made by the legislature between the state liquor stores and the state agencies. And obviously, I can go into the differentiation, but I think when you're talking police, you're talking departmental employees, you're talking about the actual sale of the department's own liquor. In the agency agreement, I believe what you have there is strictly an individual selected by the department to sell the department's liquor. That liquor never, the title of that liquor never changes possession into the hands of the agent, or the title into the hands of the agent, until it's actually sold to the individual purchaser. I think that the legislature has made that distinction in those two sections. And I believe that in this section, in 4301.10, they talk in terms of the state liquor stores as opposed to the agencies. And I think that even the case law has made some differentiations between state liquor stores, agencies, and warehouse type of agreements.
So this section has nothing to do with agencies?
4301.10. Yeah. I think what that's saying is that the department may only be sued with regard to the state liquor stores, not the agencies. The differentiation is, again, the stores and the actual agent.
You could arrive at this conclusion from case law or from just your reading of the other sections in paramateria? How do you get to that?
Well, I think two things, Your Honor. First of all, with regard to the statutes that I mentioned, I think that they make that differentiation between the stores and the agencies. But I also think that if the court examines the case law that I've cited in my brief, number one being the Hoffman case, and I think there's a differentiation that was made, you know, in that particular case also.
But it doesn't really speak to point 10, the Hoffman case being limited to stores, does it?
I think that was one of the differentiations that the Court of Appeals case in Hoffman, the 1954 case on the damage area, I think that the court specifically emphasized by italicizing the word state liquor store.
I'm familiar with the case. I don't want to delay you any longer on that question.
The essence of our argument is that the Court of Appeals, by reading into 4301.10, into the term suit, they're saying they're judicially legislating by adding, in effect, the term monetary damages. And the court held that the effect of 4301.10 that it would be only involve monetary damages, nothing more.
Would you want to go to Westchester and Bell Fountain and Medina and Ashtabula to try all these matters?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
The whole purpose of this was to try to centralize this in Columbus, so you all, the Attorney General, didn't have to run around the state defending these cases all over the state. That's why you always could bring us into Columbus, because that's what you told us. And so we used to have to do that. Now, why would you be objecting, if you recognize this is going to be tried at some point, why would you be objecting to the fact that it's being tried in Franklin County?
Well, Your Honor, I think what 430131 says, when it says that no court other than the Court of Common Pleas in Franklin County has jurisdiction with regard to, you know, restraining any type of power or anything like that, what it's saying, in effect, is that jurisdiction actually exists under 430110, then the actual, I guess for lack of a better word, forum would be the Franklin County Court of Common Pleas. Second of all, if under 430110 there is actually jurisdiction in that area of the state liquor stores of leases, purchase contracts, and that type of thing, the Franklin County Court of Common Pleas has jurisdiction to restrain duties or whatever in that particular area. But first of all, there must be a satisfaction 430110 on the jurisdictional aspect before 4301.31 would actually come into effect.
Yeah, I understand that argument. Where would you have had them file the suit? In Westchester?
In this particular case, Justice Douglas, I don't think that there actually is any place to file that suit.
That's why I'm asking the question, because you really foreclosed their ability to question this procedure, don't you, if we rule for you.
Well,
isn't that the issue? That's your issue. I mean, we seem like we're batting around the edges. Isn't your issue that no suit lies such as lies here, whatever court, where Franklin County, wherever, there's no statutory authority for a suit like this. Isn't that your?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, that's what we have to decide, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay, whether the word sue, as used in point 10, includes just money damages, or I mean, whether it's broader than leases and real estate.
Right. And I think what we're dealing with is a total discretionary act of the director of the Department of Liquor Control in selecting an agent. And is this the type of thing that an applicant for an agent position has the right to challenge that? Is our position that they don't?
Isn't your argument that point 31 doesn't give anyone any more right to sue, another remedy or cause of action, than is already given in point 10? It just says that whatever authority anyone has to sue the department has to be done in Franklin County. That doesn't broaden the right to sue someone or to sue the department. That's your argument. Okay.
Exactly.
But it's peculiar though, and it speaks to what's obviously the injunctive relief doesn't mention the word sue in the use in 0.31. It says to restrain or prohibit, it obviously refers to injunctive relief sort of causes of action. Is that?
Well, I think that's the reason that I actually included the definition of sue. In my brief, I don't think the term sue is limited to monetary damages. I think would also include any type of an injunctive relief or whatever. I hope that's responsive to your question, but that would be our position. It's not as if the agent selection process is totally without any type of just total non-reviewability. In 430117, it specifically provides that the township trustees or the city council, the chief police, any institutions such as churches, schools, whatever, within 500 feet, have a right to request a hearing in their community on the advisability of actually issuing an agency contract and that particular act. I would be the first one to admit, though, that does not give that specific disgruntled applicant to a bid type process, you know, any type of remedy, except, you know, he, in this case, I think there was even some evidence in the affidavits forms that were submitted that was the reason that the township trustees in this case actually objected to it, because of the BCL suggestions, you know, it actually given to them. As far as
well, counsel, what if evidence developed in one of these that the appointing authority put the word out that we're going to have an agency store here at this location, and it's going to go to whoever gives the largest contribution to my favorite candidate for governor. Is there no recourse anywhere?
I would say there is, from the standpoint in that particular type of case. I think, you know, we're probably in a situation where, you know, we're talking about a bribery type of situation, or we're talking about a fraud type of situation. And I think that's where our criminal courts, you know, would be the specific spot where anything like that could be remedied.
But there would be no opportunity for someone else who wanted to just bid competitively for it to go to complain or to seek court intervention in that process. I understand that under that extreme fact scenario, you would have a violation of a number of criminal statutes, which would be the province for prosecuting. But assume something about that bad. We can conjure up all different kinds of facts. There's nowhere to go for relief.
No, I don't believe there is, Your Honor. And I think the main reason being is that whether we agree with, you know, the wording of 43.01.10, that's what the legislature actually, you know, enacted, and whether that was a wise statute or not, I mean, I think with all due respect, we're stuck with it. And I think, second of all, we're talking about a totally, totally discretionary action of the director in the selection of this, in an industry that this court, the U.S. Supreme Court, has repeatedly termed an inherently dangerous industry that needs to be specifically and, you know, controlled. I think the next step that we're going to have to look at, though, if we're trying to strive to give an unsuccessful applicant some type of a review process, where does this stop? I mean, are we going to get to the point where we're saying that an agent that holds one of these agency, let's say contracts, agreements, whatever, can they bring a suit saying, okay, we don't want to carry these particular container sizes, or we don't think that you should have Jack Daniels in the state of Ohio because it's not selling like what, you know, some other brand. I mean, where do we cut this off? I mean, we have to have some type of discretionary power for the director over his agency and over his liquor, not the agency, but over his liquor. And it would be, you know, our position that whether we like it or not, there's just no jurisdiction in this type of a situation. I reserve the remainder of my time, please.
Thank you, Mr. Guthrie. Mr. Shoemaker.
May it please the court, Mr. Guthrie. I'm quite nervous today because as I was leaving home to come here to argue, my daughter asked me where I was going, and I told her I was going to be arguing before the highest court of the state. So she insisted upon reading me my horoscope. And while I insisted that she not do that, she thought it was a good idea, and she read to me the first line that said, "Stop talking to someone who will not listen." It is my hope that that does not apply to this court.
Never applies here, Mr. Schiller.
It is also my hope that Mr. Guthrie is a Sagittarius. In addition to that, I believe that I have to press on because of what happened in this particular case. In this particular case, while the facts are not of the utmost importance, they are interesting in this this case, as they apply to the situation that we're discussing. In this situation, there was a request for bid proposals, and my client was the only proposer.
We know about the facts, Councilman.
I understand. But what's important about that is that in this particular instance, it has been characterized that we are asking for a review of the decision. That's not what we're asking. What we asked for at the lower court was for the court to intervene and not allow the Department of Liquor Control to exercise authority that it didn't have. Because essentially what the court did was it withdrew my client's application after a period of time. And the argument then is made...
Didn't your client not have the premises constructed?
It was in the process of being constructed, Your Honor.
Was the construction begun, or is this one of the ones we used to do where we gave a vacant lot and a number to get a permit?
No, the construction had begun. The more interesting part of the process is that after they rebid it, and they then decided that another person was the better proposer, he in fact had a vacant building after my client was ready to operate. So from that standpoint, at least factually, we were trying to get a review of this second decision. What we were trying to do was give my client its rights prior to the time that the department exercised any authority to try to just withdraw this application. We didn't feel they had the right to do it. That's what we asked the court about, and this case was dismissed as not prior to any argument.
You didn't have that back pattern, the prior approval or the prior application and then a subsequent application approval. Would you agree or do you agree that the action of the director is purely discretionary and unchallengeable?
No, I do not believe so.
That's really what we need to get to.
I believe that if it's arbitrary and capricious, we have the right to challenge that decision because it essentially goes beyond the authority.
You fit within the constraints of 4301-10-B1. Are you permitted to sue? Absolutely not. But that provision only applies. 4D seeking a contract under point 17. But it says that a contract is awarded to grant an agent. I understand, Your Honor, but essentially under
4301-10. It talks about what has been distinguished between agency stores and other types of stores. The argument has been made by the department that we are an agency store and therefore don't fall within the provisions of that particular statute. That's interesting.
You said you don't.
I don't believe we do. Don't believe we do.
Well, I mean, are you permitted to sue under B1?
No, we're not. We are not permitted to sue under.
Just under B1.
And the reason we are not permitted to sue is because it specifically refers to certain types of contracts.
Counsel, just so I understand exactly what you're saying, this wasn't clear to me in brief, you're not contesting the second decision to rebid. You're going before that and saying they had the no right to withdraw your application. That's what you're, so you're really a step before that contesting the authority to withdraw. And what under what statute are you, do you assert you have the right then to contest their withdrawing of your application?
Under 4301.31, it specifically says that we have
right.
It specifically says that we can bring injunctive relief to restrain the exercise of any power or to compel the performance of any action by the department. That's what the statute says. Now, if you accept the argument that's being made by the state, there is no place to file the lawsuit under B1, then this statute, which has been designated 4301.31, has no meaning. It has absolutely no meaning. Because if you try to accept the state's argument that what 4301.31 means is that once you've got jurisdiction under the previous statute, you can then file for injunctive for relief under 4301.31. But Your Honor, as you've already pointed out, that deals with contract. How in the world are you ever, in a contractual dispute, going to get injunctive relief?
Well, you can why couldn't you sue the department to enjoin the department from executing a lease on the basis that the lease is fraudulent or is improper? Well, certainly you could do that, couldn't you?
And that's exactly what we're doing, Your Honor.
Well...
That's exactly what we're doing.
Lease?
Well,
you're... Okay, well, let's argue... Okay,
essentially, the contractor
is going to... All right, we want to argue about that. That's a different argument, though, than whether point 10 is the only statute that gives the someone the right to sue the department. That's a separate... My problem, Mr. Shoemaker, is that point 10 seems so specific. I mean, it says the department may and sue and be sued, and it sets out, the General Assembly seems to be saying, these are the limits under which the department may be sued, and then 3.1 says, well, if they're sued, it has to happen in common police court, Franklin County Common Police Court.
Excuse me, Your Honor, I would suggest that there are two problems. Number one, that would mean the legislature elevating the department's liquor control above any other department.
Well, they may have. That's not for us to decide, I guess, unless it's unconstitutional.
So let's go to the next step. And the next step is the issue that was raised by Justice Coleman. What if, under the Ohio Civil Rights Statute, someone at the department believes they're being discriminated against because of sexual harassment? Does the statute say that you can't sue the department? You can't possibly sue the department? And that's the approach that they've taken. They say it says these are the only reasons for which this department can be sued. Anything beyond that is absolutely unacceptable, and there is no jurisdiction.
We have briefed this, but if it was read that way, would it be unconstitutional? 43.1.10.
It's unconstitutional, but more importantly, what I would suggest is that you have to read all of the statutes in very material.
You'd have us read it so that it's not unconstitutional, which we're supposed to do.
And that's what I'm asking you. I'm not suggesting that you can't read the statute to say that there are certain specific instances where the department can be sued for money damages. We accept that, but that's what that statute is intended to say.
When one files for new dates or one files a declaratory judgment, please, if that's suit, and then that we're kind of debating here, if that's suit or not.
Certainly, that's a suit. That's a lawsuit.
So the use of the word may not be sued in 10, how do we read that?
Well,
we're going to argue about 31, which says you sure can't file for suits that aren't monetary damages.
But, Your Honor, essentially, at the time that the statute was originally passed, so I'm talking about the provision being one, at that point in time, there was no court of claims in the state of Ohio that allowed you to sue anybody in the state as far as the department for money damages. What the statute was designed to say was, we're going to let you sue in these specific instances so that you can recover damages, because there were already lawsuits, both prior and subsequent, that have been filed against the department, where the department accepted the fact that injunctive relief could be sought against them. And I've listened during my briefs. There are numerous cases, both relative to permits, relative to things that are clearly beyond the scope of B1. Which the department has accepted that they can be sued for injunctive relief. And essentially what we have here now is the department attempting to try to restrict any type of authorities in question the decision that they make. And while the argument has been made that this is a discretionary decision, that's a decision on the merits. My client may lose. But I should suggest that my client's already lost. I've got a client who tried to get a contract years ago now. Essentially been put out of business because he didn't have the right to go through with the contract. And that's why I think it's important for this court to speak to this issue so that it is clear one way or the other.
Why don't you argue, or maybe you did, that the language and such purchases and contracts necessary for the operation of state liquor stores, that what you're involved in here is a contract necessary for the operation of the state liquor store.
Well, Your Honor, we have accepted the other proposition only because I think in fairness to this court and in fairness to the public, there has been a distinction drawn repeatedly in the case.
Well, tell me why that language in 10 does not apply. Contract necessary for the operation of the state liquor store. Because when you get one of these, you have to bid. And then you have to enter into a formal written document with the state, an agency or a franchise.
That's absolutely correct.
Well, isn't that a contract?
You can term the contract in 7-8.
Absolutely correct. And accepting the approach that the department wants to take, that we're going to read this statute strictly, you're absolutely right. It applies.
I wondered, too, why you didn't argue that, but yeah, you just explained why you hadn't argued it stronger.
Yeah, I mean, quite frankly, I would have been arguing contrary to several cases. From several different courts of appeals, and while I
your horoscope told you not to do that here. We wouldn't listen to you, probably.
I understand. Essentially, though, if you read 4301.31, and you see that it does talk about jurisdiction of the court, not a venue statute that tells you where to sue once there is jurisdiction. It in fact says there is jurisdiction in this court. And it creates jurisdiction in and of itself, because that's what the statute talks about. And essentially, the department is making what I would term a venue argument. Because once you've got jurisdiction, then you can only argue in Franklin County. But essentially, if you accept what has been termed by the legislature itself, that no other court, other than the Court of Common Pleas of Franklin County, has jurisdiction of an action, but it does create jurisdiction. And in fact, you have to read that to create jurisdiction, otherwise you're ignoring the clear language of the statutes. And you're creating a situation where the department then has unfettered discretion beyond that of any other department. Essentially what you're saying is, they not only can refuse to give a contract within their discretion, they can refuse to give one for any reason that they wish. And if this court were to rule otherwise, I would suggest that someone who comes from a family as large as mine, where there are 8 family members, might want to get this job so that each brother and sister can get an agency, because there's no way to challenge what anybody does. They get to give these away, like candy, or as political favors, or because they don't like runs, or because they don't like blacks. We would suggest that it is absolutely improper reading of the statute. We would ask that you affirm the decision.
Thank you, Mr. Shoemaker. Mr. Guthrie, you've saved a minute and a half of your time.
Thank you, Your Honor. Several points I want to respond to Mr. Shoemaker. First of all, he uses the example of the 1983 type of action, and I would be the first one to see that if we're talking about a federal 1983 action, there's no question that the legislature cannot exempt this out and say that, you know, that even this would not apply. I would concede that in a 1983 action.
Well, what about the notwithstanding those Court of Appeals cases that caused him not to raise the other approach, why isn't this litigation involving a contract?
Well, first of all, I'm not so sure if, I suppose you could call it a contract in the sense that we're awarding a particular agent type of agreement.
I mean, that's what you'll have at the end of the process is a contract, right?
And I don't mean to be quibbling about the difference between a contract and an agreement or whatever. Yes, that in effect is what has been awarded by the director. But I guess what I've got a little bit of a problem with is they're saying that this is a contract or an agreement contract or whatever. And there was never any contract that was ever awarded in this particular case. There was no property to even evaluate to see whether this is going to meet the director or the committee's requirements. And
I thought the underlying action was to seek a declaratory judgment requiring you to award the contract?
Well, to some extent, yes. Except I
mean, they don't really want anything else, do they?
No, what they want is the agency...
so they want the contract.
Right.
Okay.
Again, that wasn't raised. I don't mean to be relying on that, but I'm saying I don't think that's the important issue in this particular case. I think that the other thing I'd like to emphasize is the selection process that's used by the director is merely a gratuitous type of process. There is nothing in the law which specifically requires the director to do any type of thing. And I think that this court even recognized that in the Hoffman case, and also I believe the Court of Appeals in the Kansas Storage case, page 15 of our brief, they indicated that this is total discretion in the director in selecting his particular agent. He has to have, you know, the confidence in that particular agent, and therefore he can do this without, you know, any type of a selection process. In this particular case, the director felt, obviously, that, or not in this particular case, but in all these types of agency situations, that a committee of lifetime civil service employees with the department should review any applications and make a judgment based on those applications as far as who would be the best agent for this particular situation. Obviously, the director does not have to agree with that. In this case, and in most cases, he has agreed.
You've used your time, Mr. Guthrie.
Thank you.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.